Welcome to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast. I'm your host, Chandrika Venkatraman. Join me as I talk to small businesses from across the world to learn about their supply chains, their support systems, and what keeps them moving. I recently sat down with Alex Zachman, CEO of Old North Collective. I wanted to learn more about how Old North Collective helps small businesses with digital transformation. We talked about the evolution of B2B e-commerce for small businesses and also explored the possibilities for B2B services marketplaces, which is a favorite topic of mine. Give us a listen.
Alex, welcome to the Source Refresh podcast. We're excited to hear about your work helping businesses build an e-commerce presence. Would you please introduce yourself and your business?
For sure. My name is Alex Zachman. I am the CEO of Old North Collective. We're a business process integrator specializing in digital transformation for companies helping to move goods online. Super buzzwordy, I know. What does that actually mean? Honestly, it's us helping companies understand their business process and configure IT systems and internal manual processes around how they would like to do business, and configuring the software to allow them to do that business, which means their systems can work for them versus oftentimes, I'm sure you're aware that most companies are going to stand up a software and just beat their head against the wall, getting all frustrated that, hey, this isn't working, it's not for me, when the root cause was actually not understanding process and not choosing the software to fit around your process. So Old North Collective, we're software agnostic, but we do have partnerships with major software players in the industry. We came out of the NetSuite ecosystem. I sat on the partner advisory board for NetSuite Commerce. We ended up migrating over, and we're still a solutions developer in the solution developer network for NetSuite. We are a strategic alliance partner with Acumatica. We are a preferred partner and strategic alliance partner with BigCommerce. We're partners with Shopify, as well as Brightpearl, Sage Intacct, and several other alphabet soup SaaS companies.
What's your take on the evolution of B2B e-commerce for small and mid-market businesses? What have you seen? What have you experienced?
I actually think small B2B businesses probably have it easier than large enterprises at the moment. B2B commerce as a whole is about a decade behind where B2C is. The fascinating thing is that if you actually look at the demographic shifts in this country, the prime buying and decision-making group in corporate America today are actually millennials and Gen Xers. And if you look at how Facebook and Walmart and Amazon have all conditioned us to buy things in our personal lives, we want solutions that help make our lives easier. If we look at how B2B business is currently being done, it's still being done in a very similar way to the 1990s when the baby boomers ruled the world and Gen X and millennials were coming of age. I think COVID has started to see some pretty big shifts in behaviors to where you're now having to adapt, because if you didn't adapt, you were going to die. And that has meant that we're seeing trends jump 5 or 10 years in the future. The past, I'd say 3 years or so, we've been working pretty close with BigCommerce to develop out their B2B edition of their product. I think it represents a pretty sizable shift in what individuals are able to do with B2B commerce. So now at a mid-market and below level, we have the ability of creating a shopping experience where your procurement person, whether they're a small business or a government agency or a large Fortune 500, are able to log in and shop like it's a normal e-commerce experience, but they're able to actually build a quote, and they can then send that quote internal to get approvals and have their organization cut a purchase order, and they can then submit the order to the merchant. And we just created a whole self-service pipeline that didn't exist before, to where you historically have had to have more of a traditional Salesforce. Additionally, we've been able to actually integrate Salesforce and HubSpot into this workflow, to where when an individual actually creates a quote inside Salesforce or HubSpot, we can have the quote actually populate on the branded website. So the client is able to log into your domain, and they're able to have a user experience that is optimized for an individual trying to buy something. And the internal sales folks are able to go ahead and work on a UI that's optimized for internal sales notes and things like that. So it really allows for a fascinating bi-directional flow, to where the inside entities are able to work in a solution that's best for them, and the external customer is able to interface with the company in a way that's more meaningful and provides more touch points, while still allowing the older individuals or maybe technological laggards to still engage in the traditional ways they've been doing business.
That's very exciting to hear. In terms of, you know, this whole evolution of B2B e-commerce, do you think this is like adoption of the solution? Is that a few years down the line? Is that 10 years down the line? Like, what's your sense?
I think it's here. If we think back to the late 90s, when more of the democratized e-commerce platforms were starting to hit, and you just saw blue water. And you saw things like Shopify and BigCommerce and Magento and Demandware and all of those things kind of pop up. I think that's what you're seeing in B2B commerce now. So about 5 years ago, 8 years-ish ago, you saw Magento start to create their B2B solution. It's heavily tailored to a handful of really large enterprise clients. It definitely has its niche use cases, but it proved that there was a desire for the B2B purchasing cycle to be brought online. BigCommerce then kind of took that and ran with it. It was actually a Magento agency that saw kind of the shortcomings of Magento. They also happened to be partnered with BigCommerce, and they created a solution to extend company taxonomy into BigCommerce, and they ran with it. Well, that launched last year, and it actually represents a sizable chunk of BigCommerce growth. They were actually, out of last quarter, they were the only e-commerce platform to show year-over-year growth. Every other e-commerce company showed losses. And if you look at the sales numbers inside BigCommerce, it's because of the B2B platform. Shopify then saw what BigCommerce was doing, and Shopify has now joined the bandwagon for Shopify plus B2B. It has some limitations. I think it will probably mature in the next 3-4 years. But I do really see, as a tool set, we're here. And I think we're at the end of the early adoption phase, and we're really at the start of major adoption from a B2B commerce perspective.
I want to shift gears a little bit back into B2C just for a bit.
Yeah.
Have you seen any interesting trends in B2C, especially since COVID, where hundreds of new solopreneurships, small businesses really popped up? What's been your experience with that growth?
I would say nothing really revolutionary has happened, I think, other than adoption. Buy online, pick up in store, I would say would be the, like, air quotes, revolutionary thing that's kind of happened. Best Buy was the first enterprise organization in the world that figured out how to go compete against Amazon. They did so by turning their stores into warehouses, and they sold out of their stores. So they have a hub and spoke model within the region, to where one store in the region is the flagship and has all of the products. And then it basically farms out the products to the local stores. And then if you go to bestbuy.com and try to order something, they're going to ship you the product from the store that's closest to you. So I would say, you know, the biggest thing that I've seen from B2C is that has now come down to the SMB level. So if you have a small regional organization that, you know, might have 5 or 10 stores, that's still a small business, you now have the ability of being able to lower your shipping costs because your stores themselves can become warehouses. Or, you know, if you are a small business and trying to sell nationally and you have a brick and mortar location, you can ship out of your brick and mortar location and then go get a 3PL for the other coast. So then you can have Amazon style fulfillment times with much lower overhead. I think you've also started to see a lot of dynamic content move down market. So depending on your personas and user groups, I can show a male or female different photos or content. Or if you're interested in a sports car versus a pickup truck, I can show you content that more pertains to you. So we have the ability to be more personalized at a small business level. And then I would say that the other thing that I think that I've seen is more of the democratization of marketplaces. So direct, like most people think B2C is having a branded website. It actually only represents a third to half of the revenue from an e-commerce model. So there's several hundred billion dollars of money that's sitting in a marketplace like Amazon or Best Buy or Target or Walmart. And I think you've seen a lot of people end up coming up to that. I also think, like, one of the interesting things from like a technology perspective, looking at how things have progressed, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you saw a lot of broad functionality that was largely not used by people because folks didn't know how to use it. Shopify, I think, has been so successful because it looked and said, hey, you're only using 30% of this platform. We're going to shrink the functionality to be 100% of this 30% of the bigger pie, and you're going to play within the sandbox and you're going to like it and it's going to be okay. And for the vast majority of people, that's made things be a lot simpler, and it's allowed for more successful deployments and more successful engagements. And I think what has allowed Shopify and to the same extent BigCommerce be so successful with going up market into enterprise or mid-market organizations is that you see that, like, say we look at like Rust-Oleum or Target, like they're massive organizations, and your listeners are probably thinking, why am I bringing Rust-Oleum or Target? I have nothing in common. I would actually challenge you and say you have way more in common as a solopreneur with Target and Rust-Oleum than you think. Because they are very disjointed organizations from a global perspective. And what you end up seeing is that the individual business units tend to operate like individual organizations. So if you look at how they stand up technology, you tend to have very complicated technology stacks because the business units themselves tend to choose the technologies they want. So if you look at, say, a new startup within Target, it's not uncommon for them to have business units that are generating under $5 million. Now, Target wants that ramp and scale goal to hit 300 million way faster than any of our listeners, or like including myself, are ever going to hit it. You know, that's one of the positive sides of being a $50 billion company is that a $5 to $300 million ramp is very easy. But what you end up seeing is that the adoption of SMB solutions and enterprise ends up being incredibly valuable because they can stand up things very fast and they can learn and iterate very fast. And then we, as smaller organizations or dealing with smaller organizations, can take the lessons learned from a large or a small business unit in a large organization to figure out how can we scale this solution and extend the life as long as possible versus having to, you know, we hit the ceiling and it breaks, and now we have to go spend $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 to go migrate to something else because it's the next solution.
That was a very interesting take, and actually a very true take on the similarities, which most people may not recognize, between some of these very large organizations that are disjointed and a solopreneurship or, you know, a small business. Thank you for pointing that out. We talked about marketplaces. I'd like to ask you about B2B service marketplaces. You know, think on the lines of building maintenance, landscaping. Have you seen much progress in service marketplace? What are some barriers? What have you seen?
I think the short answer is that selling services online is probably even further behind on the technology advancement curve than regular B2B commerce. So I would say from a marketplace perspective, I don't have a whole lot of marketplaces on my radar that function like a traditional marketplace like you or I would think of. Thumbtack is like the one that comes to mind. Angie's List is the one that comes to mind, but I don't know that they actually allow for programmatic syndication of services into their platforms. It's still fairly manual. It's still dominated by smaller regional organizations that don't have very advanced outlooks on technology. I think though that, like, from a services perspective, we can really take a page out of COVID and what happened with restaurants. We as people, like a pejorative we, like to fall victim to point solutions that are industry specific. I would like to challenge you and your listeners to actually take a look at the mainstream solutions and don't worry about what things are called. Look at the functionality and say, does this have the functionality I need it to do? And maybe I go into the settings and change the phrasing and the wording a little bit and it functions. And reason being is that point solutions are able to charge more because the niche is smaller. And because the niche is smaller, it tends to have a smaller user base, which means that it tends to have less investment as a platform. So if we're looking at something like a Salesforce or a HubSpot or a BigCommerce or a Shopify or a Magento, I would challenge people to think about how we can adapt those solutions to work for them versus falling for a point solution that has less investment, because it's just going to be a more buggy experience that's going to be more expensive. On the face of it, it's going to look like it's easier to configure. But if we look at things in terms of systems and functionality, not verbiage, we'll find that, you know, how restaurants got online so fast after COVID, you know, some of it was Uber Eats and Grubhub and things like that, but a good chunk of it was them deciding to buy Shopify and BigCommerce and say, hey, I have a good to move and I'm able to put it up. Because at the end of the day, a shopping cart is a shopping cart. It doesn't care if it's a physical product or if it's a software product or if it's a service. It's just taking money and it's projecting a catalog online. So if we look at what a service is at the end of the day, it is the same type of SKU catalog as a physical hard good. It's just, you know, hey, I might have 1 hour of photography service, or I might have a 30-minute oil change, or I might have, you know, an hour and a half worth of landscaping, but if I'm able to attach a SKU to it and attach a dollar amount to it, and I categorize it in the same way that I categorize a product catalog for reselling sunglasses or cell phones, it at the end of the day is no different from a technology perspective as moving a hard code.
I love that perspective. And, you know, I can tell you're very process driven because that's great insight and truly spoken by a process obsessed person. So thank you. Thank you for that insight. Would you like
that for a little bit of a tangent on that one? So everybody, I think, looks at Henry Ford as a genius. And if you ask most people what Henry Ford did, they would probably say he invented the automobile. In fact, you'd be wrong. Mercedes-Benz ended up inventing the automobile about 30 years before Henry Ford decided to stand up Ford Motor Company in Detroit. And they did so from Germany, so it was a completely different continent. It wasn't a new idea. He just saw that it was taking a team a week to build a car, and that a lot of the cost of the automobile was that you were having a coach-making team tied up on a single product for 40 to 80 hours, and that has a large cost associated with it. At the same time, he, you know, being in Detroit, fairly close to Chicago, for a very long time was the meat packing capital of the world. So there was a famous book that came out around the same time. I don't know if it influenced him, but Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. And it actually walked people through how a slaughterhouse and a butcher plant ended up functioning. And Henry Ford looked at how the meat packing district was able to take a cow or pig coming into their stockyard and end up having steaks and pork chops coming out in a few hours. And it wasn't a team of skilled butchers. It was basically an assembly line of a butcher being highly trained to do a very specific task of, say, taking the skin off or taking the flank off or taking the rib out. And you were then able to have that person do a very repetitive task on an assembly line, or a disassembly line in this case. And Henry Ford saw that you were then able to reverse that process and apply it to the automobile, which then greatly reduced the cost of manufacture. By reducing the cost of manufacture, allowed him to reduce the cost of purchasing the product, which allowed for the democratization of the technology itself. So here's my soapbox.
I like that analogy. Would you care to share some success stories of small businesses that you've helped digitize? What would be some words of advice you'd take from that to share with other listeners?
It won't shock you. It's all going to be process driven. I would say that a pejorative we. Tend to fall into a trap of looking at numbers and saying, I'm going to get this ROI because this other person has this ROI. And I say, don't fall for the trap. You're never going to get the ROI as the other person. Their variables are different than your variables, even if the business model is the same. However, I would say, the biggest challenge to a small organization, aside from marketing or just getting word out or that kind of thing, the biggest problem ends up being an organizational structure problem. So aside from getting the first $100 or the first $1 million or, what your marketing department looks like, the challenge really is bandwidth and process understanding. Your challenges may seem unique, but they're not. And your challenges aren't even unique from a small business perspective. When you go up into the enterprise space, their problems are the same. They're just many orders of magnitude more complicated and more effed up. It's not uncommon to see a Fortune 500 company running $50 million of sales off of a 40-page Excel document with two people in the world knowing how that Excel document functions. I would challenge you as a solopreneur or small business owner or small business manager to not fall into the trap of running your organization off of an Excel document. But I would say that the value of having a business running out of an Excel document means that you understand the business from a process perspective. So if you can sit down and create a sticky note flow chart of your business and go through the whole order to cash process and understand how your business actually functions, you can then start to figure out how to handle process improvement, either from a software, hardware, or people standpoint. You can't solve for the problem if you can't define the problem. So I'd say from a success standpoint, our small business engagements are a little bit different than our enterprise engagements. You know, cash flow is definitely a real challenge. So we're not necessarily going to outsource a lot of labor. We're kind of coming in more as the consultants, helping to coach and guide the team. And what I would end up saying is that almost as a rule, like kind of like a scientific law, like there's always going to be the exception, but like the general trend is that if you can understand the process, you can then build a system around the process. Once you build a system around the process, you can now automate things. So once you automate stuff, you now found headcount. So it's not uncommon to take a 3, 5, 10 person org and, you know, from a sizable investment in technology, you can now find an additional 3, 5, or 10 people because you automate the process. So one of, you know, as a company that comes in and sets up technology, one of the biggest things that I see different between a large organization and a small organization is that a small organization wants to cut corners on technology. And oftentimes the biggest place they cut corners on is integrations. They're going to want the native lightweight integrations. They don't want to pay money for it. I would actually challenge that. I would rather have somebody pay $80 or $300 a month for a Shopify or BigCommerce account and pay $2,000 for an integration platform into their MRP or their accounting software, because you can use that integration platform to transform data and automate processes. So things that you do manually now, if you can say there's A, B, C, D that happens, that's always going to be a thing from like a table where there's quantitative things that need to happen, not qualitative, like, hey, I need a person to look at it. If I can quantitatively say A equals B equals C equals D, I can now automate that. Don't be afraid of automation and don't be afraid of investing into the system. Interestingly enough, I will preface that I'm not an accountant, so please do talk to your accountant on this. But if you actually look at technology infrastructure, for the most part, it is considered a capital investment into the organization, which means that you can depreciate it off your books over the course of 7 years. So you can take an investment in the technology that might be the price of a headcount. So, you know, it might be $100,000, $150,000, which is a scary number. But if we look that we can then depreciate that off of our taxes over 7 years, and that's a one-time investment, and it replaces a $40,000 or $50,000 a year employee, that investment paid for itself within the first 2 years. So I would say that would be my biggest piece of advice for a small business. And I would say that if we look at successes within small businesses, it's usually around that. Like if we can define the process, and then we look at what portions of the process can we automate.
Thank you so much, Alex, for participating in this interview and for sharing your insight, your success stories, and being generous with your advice to help other small businesses. All the very best in your endeavors.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can get more information on today's episode in the show notes or at source-refresh.com/podcast. To hear more episodes, please subscribe to the Source Refresh Small Business Supply Chain Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from.